The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast and live on video is Alan Green, Swiss Alps, by the looks of it. I say live, it's not live. I don't know why I keep saying live. I mean, we're alive, just about.
We're alive, and I thought I'd take this little backdrop today. I just went to have a stroll in my backyard, and I thought I'd just show you around a bit. Around this place that I live in. You know,
it's a nice back garden, that, Al. Mm. And where is that? Is that Switzerland you're in?
It is. Yes, it's getting near to the top of the Matterhorn. So it's
okay. Mm. There we are. Well, at least you got the horn. Marvelous stuff. So before we move on to stocks, it's covering three stocks today, a bit different, all different stocks. Team 70, Billington, they both had results out, and Lexington Gold, I think, as well. Before we get on to the gold, it certainly wasn't gold on the weekend. What happened to Tottenham on the weekend? You know, Newcastle, 4-0. I thought, how is this a lack of inconsistency there? Didn't they beat them 5-1 last leg or something ridiculous?
Not a lack of inconsistency, it's a lack of consistency. It's an absolute disaster. We've actually been away for a few days, so I spent a lovely few days in Wales, and the Spurs result actually put a real down on the day, which really, really upset me.
But anyway. How can that happen, though? I mean, my son, I didn't know much. I just come back and saw it on my Google. Google are very clever, aren't they? If you just search for something, they bring it up now. I always see Tottenham scores on my Google homepage on my phone. I said, 4-0? I thought, was that today? And my son said, yeah, some of the players were off, apparently. I said, yeah, but you've got a squad of like 30 players. It's like, so there's got to be some depth there, surely. I don't know what's going on.
Well, the thing is, the Spurs made an announcement after the game saying that they were so disappointed with their performance. It was a shocking performance. And as a result, they would be refunding all of the tickets bought by all the fans and the travel costs of the fans who went up to watch the game because they didn't put enough into it. And I did see Match of the Day on Sunday. It was a pretty inept show, I must say. But then again,
did they do that? Did they refund? Is that true? They refunded the...
Yes.
That's good. Because that's a long journey. Do you know what? I didn't realise this. I did the Great North Run, and I went to Newcastle. And I've also, that year, same year, we went to Paris, Disneyland Paris, And we flew to Paris from the local airport, and we flew to Newcastle. And Newcastle's further than Disneyland Paris in the plane from where we are. So it's a long journey. You got up there and get hammered 4-0. It makes for a miserable journey home, doesn't it,
It does, although Newcastle is a great city. So if you have to spend a night out somewhere afterwards, nursing your sorrows, Newcastle's a good place to do it. It's a very nice city. But it wasn't good enough. The team said so. But they also look very naive in defence as well, I thought. And you've got Van de Ven and Romero, who together should be really good, but they just left themselves wide open. And Isaac, who scored all the goals, was literally sprinting past them, timed his runs perfectly. And of course, they're pressing so high, they got caught on the break, and even Van de Ven couldn't catch Isaac. It was just...
Okay, well, let's go from one team underperforming to another team sort of underperforming as well. And this is Team 17, came out with the results for 31st December 2023. And you can see here, I mean, a lot of these gaming stocks had a cracking sort of COVID period, didn't they? Because people were just gaming, sitting at home gaming. And so this stock literally went from, one of the darlings went from, what, 2 quid up to, let me just get rid of my head there, it's in the way there, 2 quid up to 9 quid. And since January 2021 was high, it bounced around there, but it's come back down at 249. So not at the lows, but almost, well, it did hit the lows back in December, but it had results the other day, and it's struggling to get above that 200-day moving average, as you can see. But I don't know what you thought of the results, Al, but let me just get my cap league up, because I'll show you on the thing. I put these plugged into my screen, and out of 120 odd companies, these are coming in ranking now 106. So it's not looking good. But there we are. As you can see, growth there, value. We'll go through that. What do you think? I'll take me through it. Go on.
Well, Jess, we've spoken about Team 17 for many years, and it's been a very resilient performer, and I think it's tapped into a niche games market for indie gamers. Of course, it has several different brands now. And if we look at results and also the breakdown of results too,
there you go.
So
As you can see here, final results there, they went from 142 million to 159. Top line grew, but then the margins just collapsed a little bit. Oh. Operating profit from 32.2 million down to 42 grand, and end up making a loss after tax of 3.7 million. So margins were impacted,
and the company did actually, to be fair, warn earlier in the year that some loss-making titles had impacted on that performance. And here we're seeing the result of that. But if you break it down, they've got several different brands within the stable. Of course, they acquired Story Toys, which delivered growth of 26% over the period, launching three new apps, including Barbie, Color Creations, Lego Duplo, Disney, Mickey and Friends, and others. They also had growth from the games table too, which showed growth of 12%, launching 11 new games during the year, including a game called Dredge, which won several awards, sold over a million units. And the company's said it's undertaken this strategic review and look at the direction it's going in, and it's now refocusing on what it's good at, its core indie games roots. And on the back of that, it's reviewing the cost structure and the processes to cut some of those costs out was completed in the last quarter of full year 2023. Headcount's now down to 348 as opposed to 392 previously. So it has restructured, it has cut costs. And in terms of outlook, they've said they've made a good start to 2024, although, you know, mindful of the challenging competitive landscape. They've got a pipeline of 10 new games expected to launch during the year. And also the restructuring of games label, they've started the year with what they refer to as an appropriate cost base with stricter cost controls in place. And they're very confident they're going to give or deliver an improved underlying trading performance. And I think, you know, if you're looking at what this company has done previously, obviously Debbie Beswick, the founder, who oversaw that growth and particularly guided the company through the COVID period, she's now stepped aside, although she remains with the company as a consultant. Steve Bell has taken over as chief executive, and he said, look, we're back on form, solid slate of games and apps, an exceptional back catalogue, which is earning them plenty of money, and a clear plan for growth across the games label. But I think what we've got to remember is that, you know, we're talking, if you're talking comparatives here, this company doesn't have any debt. You know, it still has cash and cash equivalents of 42.8 million at the bank, down from 50.8 million last year. It's now cut those costs. So I think we can expect it with astute, careful management and the measures they've already taken. I think we can expect to see the company end the year with that cash balance intact and hopefully greater growth and, you know, a return to positive numbers in return to gross profit margin. Of course, EBITDA are very important, and adjusted pre-tax profits. And of course, the all-important earnings per share number. So, yeah, it's been a tough period, but they've responded, and they responded promptly. Good stewardship from Steve Bell, the chief executive. So I think this company's got enough in the tank and certainly enough cash at the bank to deliver a turnaround this year.
Yeah, that is a positive. I mean, if you look at, you know, and you have to put it into context, we've gone from almost a Goldilocks era in gaming to now cost of living crisis, people going back to work and maybe cutting back on stuff. So it's almost a perfect storm of where everything. But just looking at here, so the share price there is 260. Target price brokers, that's the average of, I think, two or three brokers, but they've got 324 at the moment. That's a 12-month target. So it's 24.62% up. Like I say, market cap 379, but with the cash, no debt, the enterprise value is 336 million. And so they've got cash of 42.8. But if you look at this, so you can see, you know, this is half-year results. They did grow there 31% of half-year results, but operating profit growth went down, and so there's point scoring here. But here you can see it's got worse this second half because just 12% growth for year on year. But they've never been cheap, but they are a quality business. Like I said, if you look at the previous margins, operating margins have been up to 23%, which is very good. You know, so they're a very healthy company. I mean, look at that. 42 million, gross gearing zero, current ratio, which is of course current assets over current liabilities, 2.1 times. They can pay those off. So there's no worry on the health front. So no. It's just but like I said, look at the margins here. Margins for the half year. Gross 43.12, and that's down on the previous year. They were pretty much 23% operating margin, but return on capital has gone from 6.3 to 0.02. And like you say, the momentum, there's no momentum there. You've got share prices there. But if you look at the forecast going forward, there's not a huge deal at the moment, you can't tell, but they're still going to be looking at dipping by 3% top line growth for 2024. That should be, there's a figure missing. But then it starts to grow again slowly, 25, 26. And so it's a good business. I mean, when it gets going, and like I said, it's good with margins. But so not a huge amount of upside. But then they could surprise the upside. You never know, depending on what the games do, you know?
Yeah, well, this is it. And I think also, you know, to take the comments, you know, from the company, that they're refocusing on indie games. That was what drove the growth in the early days. It's what drove the growth. That's what the company is known for. So they're focusing back on their core strengths. And I bet Debbie Beswick has had a word or two to say about that. Let's go back to basics. Do what we do best. Let's grow Story Toys, which is delivering 26%. Or delivered 26% growth last year. Carry on with that. Focus on what we're good at. You know, cut costs, headcount down from 392 to 348. You know, so they've taken those measures already, and they're already seeing an impact on their bottom line. So I think all eyes out for the next trading update from the group on the current year. And I think we'll get some fairly early signals then as to where we're going. But if we look at the chart, look at the turning point, you know, just after Christmas, the shares hit a low of £1.50. And then, of course, we've hit a series of higher lows since that point, haven't we? So
yeah, you often get this sort of, you know, when you got a gap down like that on the trading update, that was when they warned about, I think, the interims or
that was the one,
gap
yeah,
down.
Yeah,
you get
yeah.
a big sell-off, the extreme sell-off, then you get a technical bounce, but it still needs to get above that 200 moving average. It keeps breaking out. So I'd say a move above that would be quite nice, but it's not doing that. At the moment, it's still sort of, it may be in a range now, but I think that's probably the low down there.
I mean, I think we could see an extended period of consolidation now around current levels. Those that got in at £1.50, I think, have done really, really well. But if it consolidates around current levels and then breaks up through, then I think we're going to see a break back to where we were possibly as high as £3.60, which, of course, was the high from, I think, November last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. It is a good business. Just, you know, it's one of those companies where I think, you know, it's almost sector specific. And I talk about companies that it's two kinds of companies you can invest in, pretty much. You know, the revenue generating, profit generating companies. That's performers who are generally performing well. Will they continue to perform? And they're steady rises. But then you can get some significant upside in recoveries of good businesses. But you've got to look at what the problem is. If it's sector specific, then that's fine. Now, if it's a problem with the company itself, then you've got to look at, you know, the products and the management and all that stuff. It's a complex. But it seems to me that all gaming companies have had a bit of a hard time. If you look at sort of a tiny build and all that, apart from Gaming Realms, actually. Gaming Realms are very well. But nevertheless, it has been a tough time for all gaming companies. But, I mean, this is, you know, one of the best in breed, I think, Team 17.
Oh, yeah.
They've got no debt, plenty of cash. It's you know, it supports very well, but... anyway, okay, we'll look at next, Al. What's up next?
Okay, so let's look at Billington Holdings.
Yeah,
BILN. And this is a real powerhouse of a company.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? This is a tale of two different companies, right? This is Billington. These are in the top 10 of my microcap league list just because they're knocking out of the park. I mean, look at the colours here. They got growth, 30, all in the green. Total value is good. Momentum is good. Health. There is, you know, their margins aren't big, and their upside, I mean, in fact, it's the same amount of upside that's ascribed to Team 17, but 24.49%. But again, when companies are doing well, they can't surprise the upside because they're doing well for a reason. They've probably got a good product, a good price, a good management. And so they recently won a big contract as well, they're 90 odd million or something like that. So
90 million.
That could happen again, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, go on, Al, sorry.
So Billington Holdings PLC, you know, it's a great British company. And it thinks steel, you know, look at these huge steel structures around the UK, around the world. It's one of the UK's leading structural steelwork contractors. It has a product also called Easy Edge, which is a safety measure for construction workers on site. Peter Marshall Steel Stairs is part of the company. It's involved in the design, fabrication, installation of steel staircase systems. We then have Hordit, which Hordit is an ecological or an environmentally sustainable hoarding solution. So, of course, when you walk past these building sites, they're surrounded by hoardings. These are eco-hoardings, effectively. And then there's TubeCon, which is a structural steel fabricator specializing in architecturally exposed steel structures, you know, such as the Lloyds Bank gherkin. And then along with that, you've got specialist protective coatings. So anything steel, Billington are the company to come to. And again, you know, a stupendous set of full-year results announced by the company. So the shares currently trading, you know, we're going to look at the chart again in a second, but, you know, we're year highs now, just under £5 a share, has been as low as £2.82 a share, pays a nice dividend yield of 3% or 3.14% as well. But again, revenues, 132 million. You know, this is a record performance for the group, up 53% on last year, which is terrific.
Yeah. EBITDA. Well, look at that, all green. Committed teams having there. Look at that, all green. Got revenue growth 53%, operating profit got 124%, net profit growth 108%. It's all triple digits, pretty much. And two most important things you look at companies are growth and value, pretty much. If you can pair those together and then get momentum in the chart, that's the three. But look at that, all green on the growth and even on the interims. And the value's all good. Price to book 1.3 is fine. It's not in the red. Mm-hmm. It's good. But I mean, price to sales 0.5, PE of 6, EV EBITDA of 2, price of free cash flow 5. So excellent. Again, another healthy company. And look at the cash difference between half year and the full year. They've gone from 10.8 million to 22 million. So no, gross gearing 0 and a current ratio of 1.8, plenty. So anything over 1 is very generally healthy. The only concern, though, is literally because you know, it's quite a capital-intensive company. Then gross margins aren't huge, but in fact they've gone down a little bit from the interims. But operating margin has gone up, and return on capital employed, which is very good, 25.24%. So that's very important. Anything sort of above 10%, I think, is quite good. But that's good. And again, momentum's there. Broker target for this is
And I think also, 610. Also for existing shareholders and investors, a dividend of 33 pence per share, you know, up from 15.5% pence a share last year, which is a massive 113% jump. They added an exceptional amount of 13 pence per share to reflect the outstanding performance. So really rewarding shareholders there. And comments from the chief exec, you know, very bullish too, excellent trading performance against a challenging backdrop in the UK, similar to 2022. And there are further challenges ahead, but Billington's already made significant investments for the future, and it has a record order book going forward. So not only are we seeing a record performance now, the company has a record order book. So this level of performance should be sustained. Strong balance sheet, and you know, the company expects to continue to perform at this level. So, you know, a superb result, and I think again a great British company to invest into that pays a nice dividend yield. And you know, if you picked up the stock, say in November when it last year when it dipped briefly below £3 a share, you know, you're selling your nearly doubling money, and you're getting a 3% dividend to boot.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. This is the cash flow statement for the interims and the full year just announced. Net increase in cash, 10.4 million. Yeah. Free cash flow, 13. And that's an improvement from 46 grand in the interims. The second half was a blowout. Unbelievable. So it's very good.
Well,
okay, go on.
Yeah, just to say on that, I think also with lead times as well, you know, you these contracts are one, but the actual cash flow from those contracts is often delayed, and you'll often see it hitting the order book the year after. So while it's great to win it, when it hits the balance sheet, it can often be 6-9 months ahead. So that's got to be factored in too.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, and lastly, what we look at Lexington Gold, is it?
Yes, Lexington Gold.
Is it ticker?
Yeah, LEX is the ticker. You know, a great little gold company here. So so the company has a number of projects. It has projects in South Carolina, and these projects are predominantly gold projects, and the region is highly prospective for gold, many historic gold mines in the region. And the company recently provided an update on what it refers to as the Jennings Pioneer Drill Program. And 500 meters of drilling, three diamond core holes, and observations of massive sulfides and associated quartz barite veins, chalcopyrite found in sulfide zones, indicating copper, gold mineralization, and so on. Ed Neelan, who's the company's chairman, has been incredibly supportive of the company throughout. The company raised $2.5 million last year, and Ed Neelan put £100,000 of his own money in. So what I like about this management team is that they back it with their own money. More significantly than that, the company has assets in South Africa. It acquired in May last year a company called White Rivers Exploration. And in that company is Australian explorer, geologist, and veteran billionaire Mark Creasy, who is now a major shareholder in Lexington Gold on the back of that acquisition. So White Rivers Exploratory owns tenements in the Witwatersrand goldfields of South Africa, some getting off of 90,000 hectares of land, and a JORC resource estimate of 37 million ounces of gold across the area. So there's a joint venture working there with Harmony Gold, but the company provided a further update from there, where it's undertaken drilling, 2,300 metres of drilling, four holes and five deflections, mineralisation in three of the main holes. And again, you know, it's a big step forward for the company, more to come. But of course, the movement in the share price today, if we look at the chart for the year, we've seen a chart that's not untypical of small cap miners. We saw the heights hit last year when the company signed the deal to take over the WRE tenements in South Africa. Since then, it's come back. And of course, again, there's a long delay before the deal's signed, then you get feet on the ground, and that's very much reflecting the share price performance. But a really sharp spike up in activity this year. You know, we've seen the share price return to 5.4p today. So on the day, as we speak today, the share price is up 20%, which I think gives you some indication of the importance of those Jennings Pioneer drill results. The management team are backing this all the way. The money's in the bank to complete the drilling work, and I think we're going to get more results as we go forward. And I'm particularly excited about what they're going to find in South Africa. And of course, you know, the actions that Mark, you know, having a guy like Mark Creasy on your shareholder register is a real feather in the cap. And I think Lexington are going to benefit more and more from that as the year progresses.
Yeah, look at the price of gold there. Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it? So that resistance level,
massive breakout. It's a we've been talking for years about gold breaking out, really breaking out of $2,000 an ounce, and that has now definitively happened. It's broken out of that ceiling, or it's broken through that ceiling that we've been trying to get through for years. So. So it's a big move, but I think, you know, we could be seeing $3,000 an ounce, you know, before the year's out at this rate.
Look at that. Yeah, gold is up like that's a big move for gold. That's up like 14.77% since March, since the 4th of March.
Yeah, it's huge.
Can see that line up on the chart there. If you're watching on video, by the way, if you're listening on podcast, then check out the video. But at 2080 odd, kept hitting that since August 2020, kept pulling back from it all the time. Yeah, and then finally, I think that's something to do with central banks. Must be, reducing interest rates. It's discounting that, isn't it?
It's central banks. It's also the fact that
The central banks are buying gold as well. Apparently, China's buying, and Russia's buying.
Central banks are buying. I mean, China's been snappy up gold for the last 17 consecutive months. So, you know, that gives you a clue as to, because obviously, you know, as the gold's acquired, it becomes it becomes scarcer. So that in itself is having an impact on the price. But also, when you've got macro uncertainty, when the outlook is unclear, we've got the ramifications of Israel's response to the Israeli drone strikes, and then of course we've got the Ukraine-Russian issue. It's, you know, so many factors in the air, pointing to a very uncertain outlook for the world. So this is where gold offers that safe haven, and indeed, you know, we're seeing.
Do you know what? It makes me worry a little bit that that China are stockpiling gold. It just, you know, Russia did that, didn't they? Before the invasion of Ukraine, they did that as well. And I know China is one of the biggest holders of American debt. So whether they're selling that off and maybe accumulating gold, is something going to happen? Is World War III in the way, Al?
Well, just I think...
I don't care what you hold. It's not going to save you.
Yeah, it's not going to save it. Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we're looking at the Taiwan situation, and of course, China's conducting exercises off the coast of Taiwan, has done for years. The Americans sail their warships through there, you know, and threaten them off, and you know the posturing goes on and on. But China may well have decided to take, you know, take the invasion on. Looking at what's happening in Ukraine, you know, you could see, they can probably see that the West is a bit media weary of the Ukraine war, terrible though it is, and so you know, Russia can continue to prosecute. They may well just go for further land grabs. But
I did see a comment on Twitter actually, X, a guy from Ukraine saying, hang on a sec, how come America are jumping in to help Israel with these attacks from drones, yet we've been getting attacks from drones from Russia for months, and no one's going to help us in the air? So
the reason is that Israel is the 53rd US state, isn't it? So not going to get into the rights and wrongs of that, but I think we can all see what's happening there. But certainly, you know, the fact that Sweden and Finland have chosen to join NATO as well, that's that really tells you how the world's shaping up right now. So there we go.
There we are. Should we take our money out of everything? No, sorry. You find some markets just tend to climb a wall of worry, don't they? Sometimes, you know?
Well, they do.
If you look at the indices today, it's the American markets, whatever American markets, we sort of copy the UK FTSE 100 is down, 1% a day, I think it is, something like that. But that's copying the American markets pretty much. But 1.2%. But it didn't really roll over on the Israeli news and the Iran news. It's because Americans have sold off. And American markets have been so hot anyway. I mean, I've been looking at the S&P for so long. And I posted it on Twitter. I said, do you know, that was the price of the S&P 500 was 13% above the 200-day moving average. Now, if you go back, literally, there's a handful of days that's happened. I mean, even in the rally from COVID, it wasn't that big a gap. So you can see there's a bit of a bubble situation. It needs to come back a bit because it's literally run away. It's nuts. Yeah. And the gap above the 200-day moving average is crazy. So it needs to have a consolidation or pullback or a little, you know, I'm not saying it'll drop off a cliff, but it needs to settle down a bit and stop rising and just let the 200-day catch up a little bit. But
so you're short of the S&P then now?
Of the S&P. Well, no, I never go short. I've tried going short once on an index, never on stocks. It's funny when you show someone was bullish on the stock and the kind of results of the day, or mention stock. But I looked at the balance sheet and everything and put it through my website, and it's looking dreadful. They've lost loads of money. And he just said, oh, what are you shorting it? I said, no. I mean, you can have an honest discussion when you talk about stocks and shares. You know, if something's losing lots of money, you can't ignore that. You can't put a positive spin on that. You've got to look at that. If you're an investor, you must never get married to the story. Just look at the financials and say, this is not going well, you know. But you're shorting it. I've never shorted a stock in my life. I've tried it with an indices once or twice, but not a stock. But I think this is going to come down a little bit more. You can see. If you look at the 50-day moving average on the S&P 500, I mean, there we are. It's just broken it there. And if you look at that, it hasn't done that for a long time. In fact, last time it did it after a big run, was pretty much, which is quite worrying. After the COVID thing, it sort of broke it down there. In fact, a couple of times it's broken it and bounced back up. But I mean, I don't think it'll drop that much. But I mean, because there's too much power in the Mag 7 or the Mag 5, whatever they are now.
Yeah, that's right. It'll probably come back to the 200 days. So, and if it does, and if it crosses briefly below, that's a healthy thing. It's just, you know, it's markets never go up in straight lines, do they? So, you know,
What's annoying though is that they rallied, and if that comes down, it'll drag us down. We haven't rallied yet. Give us a chance.
this is the problem, isn't it? You know, we're always waiting for it to happen over here, and then you look over to the US, you think, oh goodness me, well, this is at a high. So why hasn't the FTSE responded? Oh, it has.
We need to be in sync. That's the trouble. I mean, they have a fall off now. It'll rally about 3 months down. Then interest rates come down. Then it'll be a big rally. Every market will rally, hopefully. Marvelous stuff, Al. Thanks for that. And speak to you next week.
Cheers, Justin. Nathan.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.